and welcome to this Lush podcast, Activism in Existence, the series that seeks to uncover the individual's story and their experiences of being an activist, how they've changed the world and how activism has changed them. The series will showcase the diversity of individuals and their approach within activism and what it means to be a glitch in the system. In this episode, we spoke with Prue Waldorf, who left a career in creative media and became a humanitarian first responder in refugee camps. Prue is a passionate social justice campaigner and co-founder of the not-for-profit organisation We Are One Collective, a network of change makers and innovators who pool their knowledge, skills and resources to help build capacity at grassroots level. They facilitate short-term, high-impact creative projects with people who are seeking refuge in Europe. Prue is also a workshop facilitator and yoga teacher with a particular interest in resilience building and sustainable activism. What is your story?
I grew up in quite a political household. So my parents were kind of Marxist socialists and they were very feminist. So I kind of got the concept of a very young age that there's a lot of injustice and inequality in the world, that there are kind of dominant forces that seek to kind of maintain that status quo, and that if you want to see things change and if you want things to be different, then you have to unify with other people. Areas of interest or the things that bothered me, some of them have been consistent throughout my life, and you know, other things have kind of come to me more recently, but I think they're all like a version of that, really, this sense of it not being fair or right that relational power allows certain people to abuse, you know, others, or to hold others back from realising their full potential as humans. I was working in the media and I kind of was a little bit sort of sleepwalking through life in a way. You know, I had, like I said, this really kind of social conscience from my upbringing, and I wasn't really engaging with that part of me. There was like a series of events, I guess it happened in kind of 2014, 2015. I was quite shocked by the election results, and not so much, you know, the political outcome as the dialogue and the rhetoric that was going on as part of that discussion was very anti-migrant, anti-immigration. I found it was like really racist, and it disturbed me to hear what I felt was very kind of fascist language coming into like regular parlay in our kind of most prominent political parties, and the fact that that didn't seem to be alarming people enough. And then in 2015, I became really aware of the Calais jungle and the situation there. I'd sort of heard about the conflict in Syria, and I've been kind of following those themes back. There was one particular day when there was like really bad traffic jams with everybody trying to go on their holidays. There was all this massive, massive traffic jam like leading up to the Channel Tunnel, and there was all this reporting around the fact that people's holidays had been ruined. And it transpired that the reason people couldn't get through the tunnel is because some young lads had died in the tunnel trying to get across to the UK. And I remember being really dismayed by the fact that they weren't really thinking about the loss of life or what might have driven those two young guys to do that, but more just the fact that loads of British people's holidays have been ruined. And I decided to go out to Calais. So some friends and I began collecting some stuff. Like a lot of people, we kind of hired a van, filled it up with stuff and kind of rocked up thinking, yeah, we can, you know, do something. And I was so shocked and dismayed to see what was then the Calais jungle. I just felt like this isn't really enough. Initially, we did that. We raised a lot of money and we gathered lots and lots of aid, and we kind of founded an organisation that was aimed at like mobilising a civil response called Calais Action. We raised lots of money, as I said, and we got so much stuff in donations from people that it filled, like, at one point we had to hire an 8,000 square foot warehouse just to keep it in, and it was constant supply of stuff coming in and going out, and we actually had more stuff than could be used in Calais, so we started looking a little bit wider afield. We got a message from a really small Danish organisation in Greece that said that they were on this tiny island called Samos, and they had experienced, like, just in that month, 35,000 people who'd come across by sea, and the population of their island was 30,000 people. And obviously they were quite overwhelmed. So there was this small group of Danish ladies that had holiday homes there, and like a collection of 12 Greek women that were basically trying to help everybody that was there. At that point, there was no like NGOs there, no humanitarian assistance. And they were really desperate. And I got there and it was just such a shock to see the gravity of the situation. And I was just really surprised that that could be happening in Europe. It was like a humanitarian disaster. It was just like people utterly desperate with nothing, no shelter, no clothes, no food being provided, no toilets, no sanitation. They were just stuck. And it was just so at odds with the messages that we were getting from the media and world leaders about migration and immigrants just being like young guys that wanted to come to the UK to find jobs. And, you know, I talked to people and hear their stories, and they were every kind of person, you know, that was, many of them were Syrian and Afghan, and they were fleeing like real kind of conflict and persecution and, you know, terrible stuff. Something just dropped within, and I just felt like I can use my skills much better. You know, I'm good at communication, like I'm good at sort of campaigning, I'm good at raising awareness around stuff. And although this isn't, you know, this isn't happening to me, I don't want to speak for somebody else, but seeing the situation there, these people don't even have clothes, shoes or food, let alone a platform to tell anybody what's happening to them. So I felt like at that point, this is definitely something I have to do. We got together like a small team of people, and we sort of decided to stay there for a few months and kind of sort some stuff out. And we set up a warehouse. We spoke to the local authority there, the municipality, which is like the mayor's office, and they were like really happy to have some support. And we gave them a large donation, which was like entrusted to them so they could use it as they saw fit, rather than it being like a foreign organisation deciding how that money was best spent. We kind of said to them, you know the local economy, you know where to get stuff. Like, we really think it's important that we work with you in responding rather than coming in and dictating how it should be done. We were able to achieve a lot. And we basically begun shipping stuff, and we begun organising shelter building. They were able to install toilets there in the port, and we got a food distribution going. Then like a German anarchist kitchen came over and they did all the food, and we just pay for materials and ingredients and stuff. And yeah, it just kind of grew from there, really. I've been back from Greece for a year and a half now. When I got back, I was kind of feeling really despondent because, you know, I really threw myself into trying to do stuff, which when I reflect on it now, was really ambitious, you know, but I felt quite sort of burnt out, and I felt a little bit compassion fatigued. I felt really disconnected from like my life back in the UK, because I was there embedded in that situation doing it every day for more than a year. So I got back and I felt kind of this weird disconnection with everybody and everything, and I had to reflect on that and kind of sort of start to take care of myself a little bit better. And I begun to reach out, and we started We Are One Collective, which is very different to the original project, Cali Action. It's not about aid giving, it's not about first response, it's about skill sharing and kind of bringing your relative talents and skills to the table and trying to find ways to work collectively. So it's very kind of refugee led, in as much as we try to give people the opportunity to come up with solutions that they think will work in their community or in their circumstances. And actually that's far more rewarding, because giving aid just kind of keeps people dependent on another power structure, and it doesn't really give them the ability to kind of move on from that situation. So that's one of the things we do. And we also do quite a lot of like creative output. So we tend to like work with people to tell their story in different ways. And then we then put that story out to the kind of the wider world. And so it's a more creative response, it's a more collaborative response, and it doesn't involve like being on the ground full time. It's like a step back. And one of the main sort of pillars of that is care and well-being and support of volunteers, because I came really close to the edge myself with, you know, just not really taking care of my self-care. I was so sort of driven to help other people that I didn't notice the point at which that started to impact on myself, and I didn't take the time I needed. And when we got back, we held like a retreat for returned volunteers, and as part of that we did some like surveying of how people were doing, and we just got this unanimous response from hundreds and hundreds of volunteers that were saying like they were really not okay. They were really, a lot of people seemed to be suffering from almost like vicarious trauma like symptoms, like quite sort of serious stuff, lots of flashbacks and feelings of hopelessness, and we were like really shocked by that. So we started to concentrate on that quite a lot, and like I said, we've done a few of these retreats. We run workshops for volunteers as well, like helping them to kind of download and process the experiences that they've had, to share with other people, to look at sort of resilience building and that kind of stuff. Our most recent project is called Humankind, and it's a web app which enables organisations to express their needs, and then it allows people who want to volunteer or support them to contact them and get in touch and to give them things they need or to give them their time. And one of the reasons that we developed that was there's this really huge network of people that care, but they can't give up their day-to-day life and go running to another country to like embed themselves in aid giving every day. That's not something they're able to do, but they would like to help.
What is your idea of activism?
Activism comes in many different forms, but the way that I understand it is when you start to understand that you can use your voice or your body as a means to challenge dominant ideologies or regimes or ideas, that you basically go against the flow and speak your mind and challenge things, even though nobody gave you the authority to do that. It's kind of like realizing that you have power as an individual, and that can inspire collective power.
What does it mean to be an activist as an individual?
I think it means that you have to build your own resilience. That's something that I've learned from my sort of experience. I really threw myself in with passion, but I hadn't done the groundwork. In deep ecology, they call it composting. And the idea is that you prepare the ground, you know, just like you would before you grow anything. You kind of do the work to make the conditions for that growth to happen better. And I just kind of jumped in. And I think to be prepared and to look after yourself and to develop like inner resilience. So like the work begins inside. And then when you've got that resilience and strength in yourself, then you've got enough to share with others. But it's just about being mindful of looking after yourself, especially when you're like doing it, you're just one entity doing it.
Who or what has influenced you and given you strength in your activism?
I think I was influenced very much by, you know, my kind of family lineage, particularly like on the matriarchal side. So my nan, she grew up in Liverpool in wartime, and she decided like at a very early age that she didn't want to eat meat. And it was kind of a bit of a controversy in the household because, you know, times were really tough and there wasn't much food. And there was a day when they had to like kill the chickens. So they had chickens for eggs, but there was a time when they actually killed them to eat them. And she refused to eat them and like got into a lot of trouble. But she kind of stayed really true to that value. And then she then was vegetarian for her whole life and influenced my granddad, who was initially like, you know, quite a typical kind of meat and two veg man in the 50s, was like, none of this nonsense. But then he then became vegetarian, became like an advocate, he was a cyclist, and he was sponsored by the Vegetarian and Vegan Society for like his whole life. And they were kind of really into nature. They were pacifists. That sort of seeing them having this kind of really beautiful idea about like people and planet and about like our place in the ecosystem and how we shouldn't abuse it, and sort of seeing them just have that really kind of centered reality for my whole life. You know, they just had this little house in Wales and they grew their own vegetables and just kind of had a really sort of simple life, but the principles that it was founded on were brilliant, and everybody that they came into contact with, like, they really did believe in that kind of, you know, always trying to do no bad, you know, always trying to do the right thing. I think their fierce kind of attitude was what led to my mum doing her kind of feminist activism, and I think she inspired me a lot.
What has activism done to change you?
It's changed me loads. But it's like a process of sort of absorption and reflection, and then, you know, that change isn't instant. There isn't really time, not to like judge anybody that does do this, but there isn't really time to like dwell too much on like, you know, the superficial things. So like, whereas when I was kind of younger, I'd like wage this like war from within on myself about my body, about my appearance, about my, you know, not being good enough in some way, and I'd be quite harsh on myself. Maybe some of that is like mellowing with age, but I also think that when you kind of really pull back the curtain and you see the reality of some of the things that are happening in the world, you realize that a lot of this kind of peripheral worry that we have, this kind of surface stuff, is like almost maintained to keep us distracted from what's really happening. So we're busy worrying about the fact that our eyebrows grow together in the middle, or, you know, whatever, some kind of criticism of ourselves or our body, rather than actually just waking up and seeing the reality of what's happening in the world. And my activism has done that, because it's just like stripped away those layers, where I definitely feel like I'm more real, I'm more raw, which can be difficult, and the emotion is much closer to the surface. Like, I can't hide it, but I actually feel like it's a strength, because I've kind of learned to master it, and I realize that there's a truth in it. And when people are encountered by that, actually they find it difficult to lie as well. So it's kind of like you really put yourself out there, and somehow people feel that and they respond in kind.
What do you consider a win?
When I first returned from being like intensively away, working in refugee camps and doing that work every day, I felt defeated. I really felt like we tried and we lost. It's this enormous battle, and, you know, we it's cyclical. So you put all of this energy and effort into making things better, and then they just seem to keep going back and going back. And you realise that there's this huge dominant force, that you're kind of standing there in the force of this huge whirlwind. Very little that you can do. But with reflection, you can start to like pick out the successes from that stuff, and you can really learn from your mistakes. So I guess it's a bit of a cliche, but definitely picking your battles, understanding what is within your capacity, you know, understanding, you know, how to do something that's sustainable, you know, keep your own resilience up, that kind of thing. So a win for me would be sustaining activism, you know, bouncing back when things are difficult, taking care of yourself, and learning when to walk away, knowing it's okay to do that, that that's still a win, because, you know, it always happened.
If you'd like to know more about Prue and their work, you can find them at Prue_Waldorf, at We Are One HQ, and at Humankind Hub. We Are One Collective hosts Pay What You Can yoga and mindfulness sessions in Southeast London. These sessions are completely free to people who are refugees and asylum seekers and volunteers. They are also one of the partners in delivering the Refugee Solidarity Summit, a grassroots refugee solidarity event which will happen on the 31st of Jan and the 1st of Feb 2020 in London. The two-day event consists of talks, info sessions, workshops for humanitarian volunteers and activists, wellbeing sessions, training, seminars, a marketplace, and an exciting lineup of creative programming. Early bird tickets will go on sale at the end of November 2019. Follow We Are One HQ on Instagram, or sign up to their mailing list at weareonecollective.org for updates on the summit and for details on any other upcoming workshops, training or projects. If you'd like to hear more from Lush, and our ever-growing archive contains interviews, debates and stories with a wide range of charities, organisations and individuals, please download the free Lush Player app, which is available for both Android and Apple.